Welcome to Evolving KM, a podcast where we discuss how knowledge management is progressing and the impact that's having on KM professionals. I'm Amy Monahan.
And I'm Gwen McAlpin. In each episode, we interview people who have either worked in or on the periphery of knowledge management. We get their perspective on how this profession is evolving to meet the shifting demands of legal service delivery. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Good morning. Today, our guest is Sukesh Kamra. He's the National Director of Knowledge Management at Norton Rose Fulbright. Welcome, Sukesh. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. Thanks very much for having me. So I've been in knowledge management now for just over 14 years. This is the 15th year, and I've been at Norton Rose Fulbright for just over 5 years. My background is actually as a technology law lawyer. So I practiced for a very small amount of time before realizing that the practice of law was not something I really wanted to do, which is something that sort of came at me from nowhere because I thought I would be practicing for a longer period of time. But I was always interested in technology, whether it was within law or outside of law, but technology was always something that interested me. And as I started to see some of the different programs out there, there was a master's program at the University of Ottawa, which was, I think, second year in running. And it was law and technology, the intersection of law and technology. It was very practical, very entrepreneurial, and it focused on what you needed to know when you were going into the practice as opposed to going into maybe an academic theme. And so I sort of got interested in that, applied for that program, spent a year doing it, and just sort of fell in love with law and technology. Of course, when you get out of programs, you're looking for that first job because you've got rent to pay and other payments to make. And so I was looking for opportunities. And there was an opportunity at a law firm in Toronto around law and technology. And I jumped at it so quickly, I actually didn't read the advertisement closely. It had to do with knowledge management.
It had to do with so you're thinking you're getting into a technology job and it really was knowledge management.
Absolutely. I was thinking law and technology, this is exactly what I want to do. And so I come for the interview and they start asking me questions around search and browse and taxonomy. And I'm thinking, wow, I didn't learn any of this stuff in my master's program. So this is a bit new, but as most lawyers, you do your best to wing the interview, which is what I did. And somehow got called back for a second interview and got the job. And that was about 15 years ago, and started to really understand that intersection of law and technology and what it really meant. And of course, when I started, it was all about sort of getting precedents together and drafting precedents and making sure we've got checklists of content and then putting it into a repository and finding information. Mm-hmm. And sort of that's how the role started and how I started in knowledge management, more by fluke. But when you fall in love with something, you just sort of go with it.
Yeah, that's interesting that you came at it very much from a technology perspective with your background in being a tech law lawyer and then doing this law and technology program. And I didn't know about that program at University of Ottawa, but that's very much ahead of the trend. We're just now, at least in the US, we're just now seeing some movement in law schools with providing some curriculum around the intersection of law and technology. And actually later in our series, we'll talk to some students about that. So that's an interesting perspective. Yeah, because as you say, when you started in knowledge management, it was very much about precedents, organizing data, making information available. But yet in recent years, we've really, KM has become more and more technology focused.
I think one of the interesting things is that I think KM is becoming more technology focused, not only because internally within the organization, we need to be more efficient, but I also think that there's so much pressure on our partners to provide services in much more efficient manners, that unless you've got a good process and a good sort of base of tools, it's really hard to deliver. And so that's the interesting sort of avenue at Norton Rose that we've taken, is sort of looking at this from the perspective of the need of the lawyers internally, but also that need of the client, and the pressures that are coming upon our lawyers to perform quickly, more agile, and more efficiently.
Yeah, it's sort of the golden age of knowledge management right now because there's so much client demand for the types of things that we can help attorneys with that, you know, some of these KM efforts in the past, it was hard to, you know, sometimes get the attention and buy-in from the partnership. And now, you know, the tables have turned.
So Sukesh, can you tell us a bit about the makeup and structure of your current KM program? So what areas and responsibility do you take on and how do you staff those areas?
So we have a very unique sort of perspective on how we build our team here. First off, we're a global law firm. So we look at knowledge management holistically at a very global level. And so we've got a global director of knowledge management that sits in our London office. And the structure then sort of goes down from him to the five regions within which we practice. So that's Canada, the US, South Africa, Australia, and Europe. And within those five regions, we have a regional head of knowledge management, of which I am one for Canada. My four other counterparts sit in those other regions. And then the idea is to really understand the market considerations and needs within each of those regions to say, what sort of people, processes, and technology do you need that resonate within your market? So for example, in the US, we don't have any knowledge lawyers. Mm-hmm. But in Canada, we have 8 knowledge lawyers that are part of my team. In Europe, there's about 30 or 35 knowledge lawyers. Mm-hmm. So it gives you a really good understanding of sort of where the focus is and how important a knowledge lawyer's role is in Europe versus Canada versus the US. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I find that in Canada, although we have now a team of 8 knowledge professionals and about 21 library and information professionals for a team of about 30 now, it's still a fairly foreign concept for most partners to say, you went to law school, but you're going to do something that's not practicing law. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting conversation to have, because I think those that get it and see the benefits of it gravitate to it right away.
Right.
But there is still a segment of the population within a law firm that just don't understand that. And I think that's one of the struggles we're actually having in our US offices, is the understanding that you went to law school, maybe not to practice law, but take on more of a support role, ensuring mm-hmm. that you can still help the practice be more efficient, maybe bring in more business, look at the business law side of things, the business of law as opposed to the practice of law. So that it's a very interesting dynamic within the organization, I find. We are fortunate enough to have the knowledge team and the professionals in place. The majority of my team are lawyers on the knowledge management side. We do have one person who's a law clerk, mostly because his skill set around tagging of content and taxonomies and sort of making content available is his skill set. And then we leverage our library professionals and our information management professionals quite a bit, whether that's in competitive intelligence research, business intelligence research, working directly with our clients as well, where our clients can contact members of my team directly and say, we've got this pain point, perhaps as a global organization within either Canada or any of your other regions, you can help us address that pain point. So it is a very unique makeup of team with very different professionals and skills as well.
And what are some of the specific skills that you look for in the professionals who fall under your KM group? Because it's one thing to, you know, it's a certain skill set to be a practicing attorney, but it's a totally different skill set to be an attorney and a KMer.
Absolutely. And I would say even further than that, even a KMer has so many different skill sets within right. that role. So the way we tried to staff our team in Canada was to say, there is what I call your traditional KM, which is all about drafting precedents, drafting checklists, training our lawyers, making sure they understand how deals or litigation matters are undertaken, making sure that there's a consultancy element to it where a lawyer can come into one of my KM lawyers' offices and say, listen, I want to sit down. I have this matter I'm working on. I've never done it before. Or I've done it before, but never this way. Do you have advice? And so there's that traditional element of sort of drafting, training, and providing advice. And we have members on my team that do that and are very skilled. And they come with 20, 30 years of experience. So you're looking at mm-hmm. sort of lawyers who've been in the practice for a long time and have that subject matter expertise that they can provide as part of succession planning, which is sort of the first category. The second category is this ability to really leverage a skill set that's fairly unique, and that's more on the business of law side. Mm-hmm. And that can be anything from marketing and business development skills within the team, all the way down to sort of your computer science and coding and programming skill set.
Right.
And so I have members on my team who can go in front of a client and pitch the client, or go with a partner and have lunch or dinner with a client and say, here's why our firm has some advantages that you might not find at other law firms. And so that's a very different perspective in knowledge management, because these lawyers and they are lawyers on my team, these lawyers have a very sort of sales focus as opposed to a drafting and training and process improvement focus. And so their skill set is very different. And then that third bucket is the skill set where you're looking at people leveraging some of this more innovative technology that's out there. Some of it can be as basic as just your repositories, like your extranets and SharePoint sites. But then some of it can actually be leveraging some of the AI that's being out there by, you know, Watson and Neotalogic and a few other of these other companies that are looking into AI. And for that skill set, I really think you have to have a combination of some involvement in law, whether that's a law clerk or a lawyer, but having a stronger involvement around either coding or programming. And I don't think we need to go into somebody who's got a bachelor's degree in computer science or, you know, or has a master's degree or has taught computer science. I don't think that's the level of skill we need. I think it's got to be a balance between how do you sell it to the partnership as part of a law firm, but also be in there to actually be able to build some of these tools. And so we've been fortunate enough to have members of our team that do have sort of self-taught coding background, as opposed to going to an institution and sort of leading a curriculum. So that's sort of the makeup of the knowledge management team and the skill sets. Very unique. When you combine that with our library professionals and our folks that are looking at information management and competitive intelligence, it really brings a very holistic view to KM. And again, it's something that you don't normally see, at least in Canadian law firms. It's something you're starting to see more and more advertisements for, different roles within KM. But for the most part, a lot of it has to do with your traditional KM.
Yeah, I think that innovations bucket is a really interesting one. I agree with you that I think this is one where you really need to have that basis in understanding the law and how lawyers work. But yet you also need to have kind of that coding mindset, whether it's the coding itself or being able to look at how a lawyer works or look at the law and break that down into, you know, codable parts, essentially. And that's something that I see that area and that skill set being one that's growing and in greater demand. And it is, you know, kind of a question mark on how do we find those people or develop those people. So that's interesting. Your members have largely kind of self-taught themselves the coding side of it. And I guess, okay, so this is my perennial question. Do you think it's more important that that group of people come from the legal background, like maybe they're a lawyer or they have some kind of legal experience and they learn the coding? Or is it that you can take someone who's sort of a technologist and teach them the law?
You know what? That's an excellent question. And it's a question that we debate quite a bit amongst directors of knowledge management at Canadian law firms, because they're...
It's our cocktail party question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you want to make sure you get it right, but then you don't always know whether you get it right, because each individual is so different anyways. We've got organizations that I know are looking at folks that are more technology focused, but have worked in a law firm setting and can understand enough of the subject matter expertise to then be able to build, because that's their background. My sort of view on this is that I still think you have to have somebody who's leading that team that has some sort of a legal background, whether that's a law clerk background or a full-on lawyer. And it doesn't have to be somebody that's got 20, 30 years of experience practicing. In fact, you probably don't even need 5 years of experience practicing. But it's the ability to speak the language with the partnership that makes the difference. And so if you can speak that language with the partnership, having that coding background as well, to me, that's the balance that I think would work the best. Because I think the technologists are not always able to speak the language with the partners. And the credibility that comes with being a lawyer first, you know, in our sort of legal industry, there's a lot of weight to that. And it's such an easier sell to go to a partnership meeting and say, I'm a lawyer. I don't have to get into how many years I've practiced, but I'm a lawyer. But I also have this coding background with 5, 10, 15 years of experience just self-coding. I'm just learning off the internet and coding, and I speak different languages within technology or computer science, but I'm a lawyer. And that connection, I think, resonates with partners and with lawyers.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like to say that we're multilingual and our base language is law, right? But we can translate technology enough so that the partnership can understand what we're trying to achieve for them.
It's just an interesting skill set. It's very unique, though. It's very, very unique to try to find somebody that has that expertise, because what we're finding in the industry, again, at least in Canada, is that you do have lawyers that have an interest in technology, in any level of technology, not even coding, even just interest in technology. Is that sufficient, though, to be able to sell that skill set to the partnership? Is that sufficient for the partnership to say, we're going to take you to a client pitch to say, you're going to talk about technology? Because we all know, unfortunately, the majority of our partners are not very tech savvy. Some are becoming, but the majority are still sort of, you know, that's not their strength. Their strength is to practice law, and they're really good at that.
Right.
But I think it's an easier sell to go to the client with somebody who is a lawyer with that skill set.
And can speak to clients. You know, there's a whole, that's a whole different skill set to be able to exhibit that sort of professionalism and expertise and be sociable and have, you know, enough charisma to be able to speak to clients. That is a very unique skill set. Can you talk a little bit about what you're most looking forward to what's going on in knowledge management right now? You know, what are some interesting trends that you're starting to notice, and what are you really most interested in for the next 2-3 years?
I think the biggest change that's happening is an attack on the traditional culture of a law firm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't talk about culture when it comes to KM and technology. It's very focused on, you know, the commercials. But I'm really looking at this from the culture change, because I think, like anything else, when you have a change like this coming up, and it's a big change, you really have to handhold the partnership along, right? This is a big change for them to say, we're going to invest in this type of skill set. We're going to change who we are as an organization. And it's not, oftentimes it's not a tangible change, right? So you don't see a new product out there, or you don't see a new process. It's really the mindset that's changing. And it's not something, again, that's tangible, that you're going to see the mindset change, but you'll see it in behavior. And you'll start to see partners opening up a little bit more and saying, oh yeah, actually we should have a spot for this person in KM to pitch the client, mm-hmm. instead of taking mm-hmm. that partner who might have subject matter expertise. That's a monumental change,
right.
Because our partnership, and I'm sure most partnerships, feel that it's about subject matter expertise. We are going to win clients because we have the subject matter expertise. The reality is, your best lawyers and my best lawyers, not a big difference. Not a big difference. The differentiator becomes the people that have that KM background. Amy, like you said, that can sell, mm-hmm. that have the professionalism, that can go in front of the client, maybe have some sort of technology type background. That becomes a differentiator. But the mindset of the partnership to change, in my opinion, is something we should look forward to, something we should press hard on, mm-hmm. because I think if we can start changing that mindset, everything else will start to follow. Then you can go to the partnership and say, I actually need some financial investment in this type of skill set, and I think we can find it either at this university or this association that just has people that are programmers or coders or salespeople even, right? Because I think at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how good your idea is or how much programming background you have. If you can't sell it, you're not going to win it, right?
So. Right. No, that's interesting, thinking about this as a cultural change, and that this is a, you know, kind of a period we're in where the change is going to take some time. And we're starting to see that, you know, with some of our partners, traditionally they've been, you know, they've held the client relationship. And as you say, it's been about subject matter expertise, and this change where clients are wanting a different package or a more holistic package. It is a change, and, you know, bringing in other people with that expertise is, you know, that's a little tough for some partners, and it takes them some time to kind of realize that it's like, no, I can bring along my KM person and they can speak a language with this legal ops person and, you know, bring value to that, you know, I, as the client lead partner, can't have that conversation. That is a big change for a lot of partners. And I think that is going to, it's happening, but it's going to take some time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the other element in this to sort of look forward to from a change perspective is the technology, right? The rapid pace of change when it comes to technology, we've never seen in any sort of period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You just look at some of the vendors, and you bring these vendors in here for demonstrations of tools, and within 3 months, the tool looks completely different. And so, you know, three months ago, you might say, oh, this is a great tool, and I think I've got 5 different use cases I could see this being used on. Let's build a business case. By the time you present the business case to your partnership to say, we need some money for this, the tool has completely changed.
Right.
Or there's another entrant, right? Somebody else has entered into the market saying, that was a great tool, but I've got an even better tool that's less expensive, or that it increases your process improvements, or that speed of change is unbelievable. And I don't know if we've mastered what the process should be around this. I don't know if many firms have processed, mastered the process around it, because I just feel like things change so quickly that your use case might still be the same, but you might be going down the wrong path. And then that becomes difficult because, as you know, partners from all the firms talk to each other. And so one partner will talk about, hey, we brought in this great tool and it's going to help me standardize my management of a transaction. And they'll say the name of the tool, and the other partner from the other firm will say, oh, yeah, we had that 2 years ago, and then we changed this new one. Have you heard of this new one? And then that first partner comes back to us and says, hey, how come we don't have the new tool?
Right. And so much depends as well on how maybe you configure something or apply it to a particular use case or the promotion and adoption around it. So there's so many variables with that, but I agree. You have people who are kind of comparing notes, and it's like, that isn't a like for like comparison.
Yeah, that falls on us to educate, to educate ahead, and then go back and re-educate and sort of kind of defend why we went this direction. I was actually just at the Institute for the Future of the Legal Professions boot camp at Northwestern, and you know, the students were giving their presentations. And a lot of them were tool specific. And one of the takeaways that I spoke to them about is really, if you're getting into this type of KM legal innovation space, it's really important not to be so tool focused. Rather, it's a mindset and the ability to be adaptable and flexible, because there are new tools coming on the market every single day, basically. Mm-hmm. So with that, what advice would you give someone who wants to come into this space? What are some of the skills that you would suggest that they learn to give them a good foundation for entering into this knowledge management innovation type role?
I think the first thing I would say to anybody looking at a KM type role in any type of organization or industry service is to really truly understand or read about the stuff that's going on. Because I find sometimes people get into KM thinking they know what it is, thinking they understand the innovation elements that are happening in KM. And then when they get into it, they feel like, wow, that's not at all what I thought this role would be about. So even before skill set and even before getting trained in a specific organization or institution, read up, learn about what's going on within the industry, whether that's legal or not, specifically as it relates to knowledge management, because it's very different in each of the industries. And once you have a good understanding of what is happening in KM and innovation, figure out if you are actually the person that wants to work in this area, because it's not for everyone. And I can tell you, in the legal profession, for example, there's a lot of folks that want to leave the practice for a variety of reasons, but don't want to fully leave the practice. And so they look at knowledge management and say, right, well, I'm still in law and I'm still sort of doing law and I love the technology element. And then they get into it and they felt like, well, I actually thought this role was more research driven. And I'm saying, no, this has very little to do with research. We have a team of research professionals, either within the library or as research lawyers in some of these organizations. This has very little to do with research. I mean, there's some research, but it's a very different role. So I would say, sort of number one, read up on this sort of stuff. And number two, I would say, ask questions. Go out there, meet people. Go to different communities of practice within whatever service industry you're in. Get on listservs. There's so much information out there. Word of mouth. You know, some people think that because the internet is so available and you can find everything on the internet, that the old sort of talking to somebody conversation is outdated now. I disagree. I mean, I think having a conversation with people within that are already in KM, whether they're on a vendor side, whether they're on sort of in within the organization, again, whatever service industry you're in, or just people who are interested in this sort of stuff, to have those conversations and find out what people are doing. And then you can sort of get into, okay, what sort of skill set do I need? What do I want to do? If you really truly believe this is something you want to get into, because it has evolved. It's not the same as what it was before. And again, specifically now into the legal industry, KM has evolved tremendously. Those people that used to do the drafting, now you've got vendors that have tools that do the drafting for you, and the know-how collection databases, you can just buy them now. Why would you invest in someone to do that? So that's sort of the advice I'd give for folks generally in any industry.
Yeah. And the great thing about knowledge management is people in KM tend to be sharers. So if you find someone to talk to, they're going to they're going to talk your ear off and tell you anything about what's going on in the industry and their thoughts and pros and cons. So I think that's great advice to really, you know, understand the industry and what you're getting into, because I agree, there are particularly people coming from the legal side maybe thinking about what is an alternative career path to law, but that touches on law, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they understand what KM is or that it's the right fit for them. So I think that's great advice. So with all of this change going on in the industry, this rapid pace of cultural change and technology change and so forth, how do you stay current on what is going on, trends in the industry, new technologies and so forth?
I think it's a combination of a few different things. First of all, being connected. It's so important to be connected, not only within the legal industry or even within your own market, but to get outside of the legal industry, go to the communities of practice, go to the conferences that have nothing to do with law. I've learned so much going to knowledge management conferences that have nothing to do with law and understanding what they're doing in the aerospace industry or the medical industry. And you think, wow, that's some of that stuff resonates. I can actually take that home as a to-do, you know, mix it into the legal industry and say it's not exactly the aerospace or the medical, but it's a component of that that I can bring into the legal industry. So being connected, getting out there, meeting people in and out of your sort of, you know, industry and market too. What you guys are doing in the US is very different in a lot of ways than what we're doing in Canada versus what's happening in Australia, what's happening in Europe. Stay connected to the folks that are doing knowledge management outside of your sort of geographic location, even within a country, for example, East Coast, West Coast, there's a lot of differences that are happening in specific practice areas that we should be mindful of. So I think that's one. The other thing I think that's important, and I try my best to, although sometimes time doesn't always permit, but having conversations with consultants and vendors is actually not a bad thing.
Right.
You know, talking to them, not always about specifically their tool, but just what are they hearing? What are they seeing in the industry? What should I be looking at in terms of the next best thing or one of the next best things that is sort of coming around the horizon? Oftentimes the vendors will sort of push you towards their tool, but if you can find some vendors that are more interested in talking about the changes and the transformation that's happening within knowledge management, you'll actually learn quite a bit, which I think is really good. And then sometimes I actually just go to our law schools and I have conversations with our law students. It keeps me updated because I have a good understanding of the types of things our law students are learning. And I can also reciprocate by saying, if you do want to get into something like KM and innovation and the technology changes and the process improvement changes that are happening, you might want to diversify some of the courses you're taking, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't always have to take four courses in business law if you want to understand how to accelerate a due diligence process. Maybe you want to get into a more holistic or multidisciplinary type of process when you're choosing some of these courses. Take some courses that are outside of law, because I think you'll benefit from it as you come into the legal industry, whether that's in-house or law firm or even academic. So having conversations with law students, not a lot of people do, because you sort of feel like you were a law student and so now you have to sort of look up. But looking behind and seeing what they're looking at does keep me current, because I get a sense of what it is that they're working on, what is being taught to them. And I can reciprocate by saying, well, there might be some areas where you'll be surprised when you come out of law school that might not resonate with you. So I think it's a mix of sort of these two or three things that I try to keep myself current on. Always, time is always a bit of an issue. But you try your best. You try your best to stay current, absolutely.
No, I like that. And I like how you put an emphasis on really getting outside of just kind of the core, I guess, echo chamber of maybe law firm KM. So I think that's really interesting. I'll bet you're getting some good information from those different sources. So is there any, I don't know, maybe professional reading or sources that you would recommend to people to help kind of stay current on like a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that if those that are interested specifically in the legal industry and getting into KM is to look to law schools and organizations that are providing some of these courses. We're seeing more and more courses around just KM generally. McGill University in Montreal has a program, a master's program on knowledge management. Again, not geared towards law, but a program dedicated at the master's level for knowledge management. So that's something that, you know, for those that are interested in getting into something more advanced on KM, they should look into. There's a lot of other courses that are provided by sort of organizations and institutions, agile courses. I took one on project management. I did not have a background in project management. And I took a program of project management. It was a two-day program, so you know, nowhere near a master's program, but a two-day program to get you just involved in just understanding project management methodologies and strategies and initiatives. And so even things like that can be useful. I think on the reading end, I'm probably lagging behind a little bit. That's probably one of the areas that I haven't done enough of, I think. The one book that I have started reading and everything else takes over and then I'm stuck on page 30 or 40 and then
I know how that goes.
Is a book by Joanna Goodman, which I'm sure you're aware of, and that's Robots and Law. Uh-huh. It's a really, really good book because I love the fact that it's practical. It's really telling you the landscape of the legal industry, who's using what are they using from a strategy perspective, a process perspective, a tool perspective. And I love it because it's very practical, it's entrepreneurial, it's giving names of specific firms and organizations of what they're doing. You don't always get that in a book. Oftentimes books are very academic, very theoretical. I love the fact that she's able to put the theory into practice and give you practical advice. So Robots and Law is probably the one that eventually I will finish reading, but that I'm into right now and would encourage others to get into as well.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. And it's current too. I think, you know, the issue with a lot of the academic books is they take so long to author and publish that by the time they come out, they're a bit dated.
Well, this has been a great conversation, Sukesh. Thank you for joining us. And I have learned a lot about, you know, maybe a different perspective on KM coming from Canada and how you are looking at change within the knowledge management industry. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.